Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Dr. Sophie to our weekly podcast. This week, we're talking about something that's probably very titillating to others, but no one will ever admit it. Pornography and how it affects our relationships. Believe it or not, it's there. It's present. Sometimes you don't even know your partner's doing it. And then you find out and you're really not happy. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about porn and relationships. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Dr. Sophie. 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW or 1-855-767-4966. Every caller receives a free signed copy of my book, Side by Side, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication. So today we are talking about pornography and relationships and its impact. And in our studio will be a surprised guest. I'll tell you about her in a minute. And on the phone is our guest expert, Dr. Marty Klein. He is a very well-accomplished man who talks a lot about porn in a very therapeutic way. Dr. Marty Klein, he's been a licensed MFT, marriage family therapist, and a certified sex therapist for 37 years. He's an award-winning author of 7 books on sexuality and relationships, all very good and very interesting, including the groundbreaking book that he wrote called Sexual Intelligence. Marty is frequently quoted by popular media. He's in the New York Times, the New Yorker, Huffington Post, you name it, he's there. Marty's blog is also very informative and has a lot of good information for you. It's called Sexual Intelligence. So look it up, and it's there on his website, which is really www.sexed.org. www.sexed.org. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist for the last 37 years and certified sex therapist. And so I've seen about 40,000 sessions of sex therapy and psychotherapy and marriage counseling, men, women, and couples.
I was very passionate about family planning as a way to reduce poverty and domestic violence, and then realized that there's more to sex than family planning. There's actually pleasure and intimacy and all that other stuff. So I got involved with sex therapy, and I've always been very political. So I wrote a book in 2006 called America's War on Sex, and that got a few awards, and it had an introduction by Nadine Strossen, the president of the ACLU. And I just think that sexuality, some perfectly healthy people live without it. I'm not one of these people who proselytizes that everybody has to masturbate every day and have multiple orgasms, but sexuality is so central to our political life here in America and in the West, you know, with all the religious messaging that people get and how guilty people feel and how so many couples really flounder on the issue of being unable to find a sexual relationship that they both like. And now with the whole Me Too thing, now male sexuality being demonized so much and so many women being afraid to stand up and say, yeah, I don't want to be harassed, but you know, there's more to the sex thing than whether or not you're being harassed.
Do you think, you know, I see a lot of couples who are in a bind because of pornography.
Yeah, I see that too.
What is that about? I mean, why does a husband sit there where they end up having sex with their wife and then the wife falls asleep and they go and masturbate to the computer?
I think the answer to that is pretty straightforward, and that is that a lot of people in long-term couples, they notice that the frequency and the quality of the sex declines over time.
Right.
That's like we've known this like for thousands of years. And now, you know, in the old days, people had the courtesy to die when they were 35 years old.
Right. They're staying around longer now.
And now that people are living to be 75 and we're being told from every direction that we're supposed to be having hot sex when we're collecting Medicare.
Right.
And, you know, most people don't. And for people who are okay with that, that's fine. But for people who are not okay with that, what are they supposed to do? And so what a lot of people do, whether they're 25 or 75, what a lot of people do is masturbating to pornography is just a real easy way to have sex.
Yeah, it's like supplementing.
Well, either supplementing or it's a primary form of sexual expression.
And what percentage do you think it is a primary form versus a supplemental form?
Well, remember, we're not just talking about pornography. We're talking about masturbating to pornography, right?
Yes.
So that's really an important thing.
But is there, that's the distinction you're making, but why do you make it? Because are there people who will just watch pornography?
No. Anybody who tells me that they watch porn and they don't masturbate while they're watching porn, I wonder what they're doing. Are they, is it the music? Is it the lighting? Is it the set?
Right, exactly.
So what I want to know is, what are people wanting when they masturbate to porn that they're not getting from a live relationship?
Right.
And for a lot of people, here's what sex is like. It's either performance anxiety, like I'm afraid I won't get it up, or it's I don't ejaculate inside my wife's vagina, and she's really upset about that because she thinks it means I don't love her. Or my partner only wants to have sex for 5 minutes with the lights off, and that doesn't work for me. Or my partner is very sexually attractive, but we're always quarreling about money. Or one of us wants to have another kid, and the other one doesn't. And so every time we have sex together, there's a fight about, are we going to use condoms or not? So there's lots and lots and lots and lots of reasons that the sex that's available to people doesn't work for them. Some of those reasons have to do with sex. Some of those reasons have nothing to do with sex. And so when the sex that's available to people doesn't work for them, some of those people, they just give up on sex. Some of those people, they go to sex workers. Some of those people, they masturbate to porn. And some of those people, they just go shopping a lot.
Yeah. And so what would you recommend? Should they confront stuff with their partner or no?
Well, I'm a therapist, among other things, so I believe in therapy. So whether the issue is sex or money or in-laws or child-rearing or whatever, I think the first, second, third, and fourth thing that people ought to do is talk to each other. The problem is that there's lots of people in relationships where they have fundamental values differences.
Yeah.
So, you know, most people, when they get married for the first time or when they couple up for the first time, they don't think much about shared values. What they mostly think about is, I'm in love, which is a terrible reason to couple up with somebody. So people decide...
Why?
Because that feeling is not going to last for a really long time. That feeling of, I can't live without you, and that feeling of... You give my life meaning and all of that. That feeling doesn't last very long. And if it does last, it's generally not because of the sex, and it's generally not because of It's generally, if it does last, it's because of shared interests and or shared values. So people can say, "Oh, I want to have your baby. I want to be able to look at the love child that we're going to create," without saying, "So, do you believe in spanking or not? So, how do you feel about bottles versus nursing? So, how do you feel about mom going back to work after 6 months?" Those are the conversations that people typically don't have enough of.
Right.
And then when real life happens, people say, "You know, I'm glad we have a love child here, but if you spank that kid one more time, I'm going to leave you."
Yeah. That's crazy, but it's what happens. But it's an impulsive chemical thing, isn't it? More than anything?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's how the human nervous system is wired. I mean, evolution has designed us to fall in love with each other, and no matter what culture people are from, there are markers of reproductive success that just coincidentally people find sexually attractive. So, for example, symmetrical facial features, you know, eyes the same size, eyes set on the same horizontal plane.
Yeah.
Those are markers of physical health and likely reproductive success. So magically, in every culture, symmetrical facial features are considered to be more sexually attractive than non-symmetrical facial features. Now, I'm not a big evolutionary I'm not at all an evolutionary psychologist. I think a lot of that's just speculation, but...
Yeah.
But that said, there are certain things about the way that we're wired that you can't deny. Like, we're wired to fall in love. And we're not wired to fall in love with people with the same values that we have. In fact, from a genetic point of view, we're wired to fall in love with people who are different than we are. If it's somebody who's too close in our own tribe, we're much less likely to fall in love with them. So
Is that why the good guy likes the bad girl, or the bad girl
likes
the
good guy? And the good girl likes the bad guy, yeah. And so one of the things that pornography does for people is they're able to sort of have their cake and eat it, too. They're able to get excited about somebody whose values they may not agree with.
Right, exactly.
But it's sexually exciting, and since they don't have to deal with their jealousy because their girlfriend is sleeping with the pizza delivery guy in real life,
right,
they get to have their cake and eat it, too.
Exactly. Tell me about this porn literacy concept.
Well, tell me about who that female voice is. Supposedly...
No, that's my voice.
That's your voice.
Hi, I just stopped by to visit Dr. Sophie. He's my doctor. I'm Mary Carey, by the way. I'm an adult, former adult film star. And
We have met.
I've met you. Where did I meet you?
We have met. You were involved with Free Speech Coalition.
Oh, yes. Wait, I actually, yes. Yes, I was in the... I went to Sacramento Lobby 2004 through 2008, yes.
Yeah.
I never forget Evolva. I mean, Faith.
Right.
I do remember you. It's funny. I would love to do something like that again now because in my 20s.
Did you hear what he said to you?
You never forget Evolva. It doesn't even faze me.
Oh, my.
Dr. Sophie, you should know that. Dr. Sophie's been my doctor now for, it'll be, let's see. Oh my gosh, Dr. Sophie.
What?
Did you know that we met in July of 2008, we just had our, oh my God, we forgot to celebrate. Our 10-year anniversary.
Right. This is the longest relationship you've ever had.
It really is. Actually, it is, since my grandfather.
See, and there's no sex in it.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to cry. Dr. Sophie is my longest male
So, Marty, you know Mary? Or you've met Mary?
Well, we just met casually. She wouldn't know me if she looked me straight in the face. So we just met very casually, very casually.
Very casually. Just quick blowjob, Dr. Sophie. That was it.
Great.
we just said very casually. She was trying to persuade our legislators to do the right thing, which is God's work, you know. Yeah. Now, Dr. Sophie, with whom I am not very familiar, Dr. Sophie, you have 1 million Twitter followers.
I do.
Dr. Sophie is amazing. You need to become very familiar with him. He has saved my life. He's the greatest person in the world. He solves problems. Like, he's a problem solver.
You probably have not seen my book, His Porn, Her Pain.
I've seen it. I haven't read it, but I look at everybody's book before I start.
Oh, good.
Before the podcast starts.
Okay. Mary, you probably are not familiar with my book either.
No, but I actually should read it because...
Well, pretty good
I
book.
Actually do need to read that.
His, you do.
You know, it's a situation I'm basically in now. Funny, being an adult film star, my husband that I've married, we have dealt with issues that normal couples deal with that people would think because I was an adult film star would not have bothered
me. No. You are a normal couple.
We are. Dr. Sophie, would you say I'm in a normal relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, she had a lot of pain from it, and she's never been in that position before in a relationship. She was always usually causing the pain.
Yes, I was usually the one who's cheating or doing the bad things. I've never been the innocent bystander. I've never been the one. I've always been the sneaky one trying to hide things, and this is the first time I've actually not done, I've not been the... one cheating or being sneaky or hiding my phones. This is the first time where, like, I remember, you know, my last relationship, Dr. Sophie was like, well, you guys have to be open with your, you know, emails and phones and stuff. And I wanted to, like, hide everything.
So tell me, what about this porn literacy? I think intrigues me.
Well, most people don't understand enough about the product that they're consuming, right? If the product is pornography. So what people, for example, what people don't understand is that pornography is not a documentary. What a lot of people don't understand is that pornography involves people with unusual bodies doing unusual things in unusual situations. And what a lot of people don't understand is that that people are pretending to be coerced in certain kinds of scenes, that it's not that a porn actress is kidnapped off the street and forced to, you know, go down on 12 guys at once. So so consumers, if they don't have the sufficient level of porn literacy, they in consuming this product, they might misunderstand what they're looking at,
right,
and draw the wrong conclusions about it, or feel guilty about you know, participating in something they don't approve of, or so, you know, just like people who consume media in general need to understand certain things about media. I mean, I remember lecturing to a college class once, in New York, and I just happened to mention that I had just that day had lunch with the woman who decides, this is how old this story is, the woman who decides what goes on the cover of Newsweek. And the students looked at me, and they were in shock that it was an actual person whose job it was to decide what goes on the cover of Newsweek every week. So, you know, like somehow it came down from the sky every week. So that's just such a great example of, or the fact that there's an actual human being who decides what the name of a record album
right,
is going to be.
Right.
Or what color the couch on the Dr. Phil set is going to be. I mean, that's not ordained by Congress.
Exactly.
Somebody made that decision.
Right.
Or the theme music. So the theme music on our local NPR station just changed, and everybody is like in a panic. Like, does that mean the apocalypse is here?
Right.
So,
I have a
anyway,
question.
So that's foreign literacy, and it's one of the ways that I talk to parents who are freaked out about their kids looking at porn. Because what parents say is, porn is terrible for kids. I want my kids to stop looking at porn. And what I say is, well, you're probably not going to be able to stop them from looking at porn completely. So let's at least give them the tools they need to deal with this product that's not made for them in the first place. You know, it's like, I don't want you to drink until you're 18. But if you're gonna, here's how I'd like you to do it.
Yeah, responsibly.
Responsibly and knowledgeably.
So tell me, like, I've seen this before, where a wife maybe sees her husband watching some porn, gets upset. It's really not about him watching the porn after we drill through it. It's about a traumatic experience she might have had that got triggered through that. Do you ever see that? Do you see that often?
I think that's getting too specific, and I don't like to look for trauma as a reason for people's everyday feelings. Sometimes it is there, but I think for most couples, it's a much simpler explanation, which is the female assigning meaning to the male's behavior that the male himself may not agree with. So,
like what?
Well, like, for example, you look at porn because you think my body is ugly, or you look at porn because you don't love me anymore, or you look at porn because your orgasms with me aren't as big as you want them to be, or you look at porn because you hate me. So when women have those ideas about what men are doing, first of all, you don't need trauma in order to have those feelings. But when women have those feelings, they say, and here's the solution to that. You have to stop looking at porn. And I think that that's solving the wrong problem.
Exactly, because that makes the husband want to do it more, even.
Well, it certainly doesn't solve the problem. If a woman doesn't like her body enough, you know, a woman, let's say she's 45 years old, and she doesn't look like she did when she was 25.
Right.
She's not gonna.
Right.
So a woman is 45, and she says, boo-hoo-hoo, I don't look like I did when I was 25. I go to the gym, I see all these 25-year-old women, and I don't look like them, boo-hoo-hoo. And then when you, Joe, don't want to have sex with me like as much as you used to, or even if we have sex, then that night you go upstairs and you jack off to porn, boo-hoo-hoo, I think it's really because you reject my body. And what's really going on is that it's the woman, rejecting her own body. It's the woman not feeling comfortable enough. And so I get a lot of women in the office saying, if he could imagine having sex with a 20-year-old with a perfect body, why would he enjoy my body? And him not looking at porn is not going to solve that problem.
Right, and chasing him and checking his computer and all that kind of craziness is...
That's not about porn.
Right.
That's not about porn at all.
That's about trust.
That's about trust.
Right.
And, you know, when I work with infidelity, when people say, no matter what the gender is, when I work with infidelity and people say, I want the password to your email, I want to check your phone, I want to put a GPS thing on your car and this and this and that, and I say, why do you... And some people are perfectly willing to do that, and I say, no. Hold it. What are you going to do with this information? And people say, well, now that there's been this horrible infidelity, in order for me to build trust, I need to know that this person's not fooling around. And I say, well, you know, trust is belief in the absence of fact.
Right.
And so getting more facts is not going to build trust. It's going to delay the building of trust. And that's a different way of looking at trust than a lot of couples have. I'm against this whole idea about, well, you had an affair, so now I get to check up on you every 3 hours.
Right.
That's not the way to rebuild trust.
Guilty of all of these things.
She's very guilty of all of these.
That may be a way of expressing anger.
Right.
I'm so angry with you, I'm going to treat you like a child. Or I'm so angry with you, I'm going to limit your contacts with our kids. But that's not going to build trust.
I'm going to sleep with your cell phone in my pillowcase and hide your iWatch when we go to bed.
Right.
Doesn't
I'm going
work.
To change the passwords to your computer and hide your laptop.
But that doesn't work.
I'm going to put a tracking device on your cell phone.
Right.
These are all the things I've done.
Yes, and that's only the last week.
Exactly.
So when women complain about men looking at porn, what I want to know is, what are you actually in distress about? So if a woman says, for example, when he has sex with me, it seems like he's a million miles away, which is a legitimate complaint, right? When we have sex together, it feels like he's a million miles away. And then the woman continues, and I know where he goes. He's thinking about porn actresses, and in order to get him to stop doing that, I want him to stop looking at porn. So there's an unbroken chain there of the woman has distress, she has a theory about what's causing it, and she proposes a solution. But it's all just, it has to be this one way, without checking in with the guy. Like, do you know that I feel like you're a million miles away during sex? Let's talk about that.
Right.
And, you know, maybe the guy is a million miles away during sex. Let's find out why.
Exactly.
Maybe it's because he feels guilty about what he's doing with his wife. Maybe it's because he's angry with her but refuses to talk about that he's angry about money or about in-laws. So when women say to guys, I want you to stop looking at porn, that's a solution. It's a solution to a problem, and I want to know, what is the problem that you're trying to solve? If the problem that you're trying to solve is that you can't imagine that he likes your body, let's talk about that problem. There are a lot of different ways to approach that problem, if that's a problem. And him not looking at porn is only one solution, and generally not the best. Generally not the best.
Exactly. I know. I fully agree. We just got an email I want to read to you. I'm in a long-distance relationship, and when I'm in town with my boyfriend and we're alone, he always wants to take his computer out. It makes me feel insecure, and I wonder what he's doing when I'm not around. How can I compete with a porn actress?
Great question, and the answer is you don't compete with a porn actress. I don't compete with John Wayne. I don't compete with George Clooney. I don't compete with Tom Cruise. I don't even compete with the richest man on earth, you know?
Right.
And I don't have to. I don't have to. So that's the wrong question. And, you know, once you get somebody asking the wrong question, it doesn't matter what the answer is. So the question is not, how do I compete with porn actresses? The question is, how do you two talk with each other more honestly and talk about what you feel insecure about? And, you know, in America, where the solutions to most of our internal problems are conceptualized as being external, you know, take a pill or buy something or put something in your mouth. That's usually the way that people are told to deal with their internal distress. In a world like that, when people have internal distress, when people feel insecure, they typically say to the person they're with, you need to change so that I feel less insecure. And most people don't want to do that. Most people say, oh, don't feel insecure, I love you so much, and yeah, but I feel insecure, so I want you to stop wearing blue socks, or I feel insecure, I want you to stop having lunch with that secretary, or whatever it is.
Right.
And I think a much more effective way to deal with insecurity is for people to be honest about what they feel insecure about and to see that as their own existential issue.
Right.
And at the very least, if you want to involve your partner, see it as a couple's issue rather than how can I get the other person to change their behavior so that I don't feel bad in the way that I currently feel bad.
Yeah. I mean, you got to get to the core root sooner or later, and you're better off doing it from the start.
The sooner the better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. What does it mean when you say the narratives of porn? I've heard
well,
I've seen that written.
Well, when you watch when you watch a porn video,
right,
there are several different things going on all at once. There's the actual content.
Right.
Here's a person taking off their clothes and spreading their legs. Then there are sort of the philosophical messages behind that, like most porn presents a world of abundance. There's a narrative of abundance. There's enough erections. There's enough time. There's enough privacy if these characters want privacy. There's enough of no babies crying. There's enough of whatever people want in connection with sex in porn.
Right.
And whether the actors and actresses are conventionally gorgeous or whether they're ordinary looking or whatever it is that they look like, what the consumer sees is that they have what they want. They're able to create whatever kind of sex that they want, which is not the lived experience that a lot of porn consumers have. And that has nothing to do with porn, you know, whether it's they lack the communication tools or they lack the self-knowledge or they lack the freedom from guilt or they're unable to create the time or whatever it is. Most people's lived experience of sexuality is not one of abundance. So when people look at porn, one of the narratives they see is that these characters live in a world that is just voluptuous with sexuality. Whether that voluptuousness has to do with time or privacy or size of penis or number of penises or whatever it is. So that's an example of a narrative. What I tell women is that one of the things that men love about the porn, that the heterosexual porn that they watch, is that most of the women, most of the characters played by actresses, they're very accepting of their own bodies. You don't get a whole lot of women actresses in porn covering up their bellies in porn and saying, "Don't look at my belly, it's too big." Or we have to use such and such a position so you can't look at my big, fat, hairy butt. But that's the lived experience of a lot of people.
Yeah.
That they don't have 100% access to each other's bodies. Or they're not allowed, they don't even have 100% access to their own body. They're
exactly.
not allowed to
right.
touch their own vulva. Or they're not allowed to touch their own penis during sex. So for a lot of ordinary people, whether they look at porn or not, for a lot of ordinary people, their lived experience of sexuality is not one of abundance. It's one of restriction.
Yeah. Very interesting. So, I mean, is there some kind of formula you would tell people about watching porn or don't watch porn? If you do, there's a certain amount that's crossing the line?
No. But what I would say is that, you know, if your partner is upset about something that you do, whether it's the amount of money you spend or the food that you put in your mouth or the way that you discipline the kids or whatever it is, you don't have to agree with them, and you don't have to do what they want you to do. But what every couple needs is that when one person says, "I'm unhappy about X," that the other person says, "Oh, really? Tell me all about it." That's the first step. You're upset about X? I don't know why, but tell me all about it. You're upset about X? Ooh, that makes me a little nervous, but tell me more about it. You're upset about X? I didn't realize that. Tell me all about it. So before anybody says, your upset has no legitimacy.
Right.
I think people need to know more about the other person's upset. So if some woman says to her male partner, "I want you to stop looking at porn," the answer should not be, "No, you're not the boss of me." And the answer should not be, "Okay, I'll do whatever you want, and I'll just be a little more sneaky about it." The answer needs to be, "You want me to stop looking at porn? Why is that, honey? What are you trying to accomplish here?"
Right.
Let's talk about what you're trying to accomplish rather than whether or not we're going to use this one solution that you came up with so quickly.
Right. Okay, I got another email for you. "I'm in a loving relationship with my wife, but I do use porn. I have no emotional connection to the things that I watch, though, and watching it doesn't make me want to leave my wife. Is there anything wrong with that? Is there a way I could get my wife to participate with me?"
Those are two different questions, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
You know, I bicycle about 35 miles a week, and my wife does not even own a bicycle. And the first few years that we were together, I tried to interest her in bicycling, and she tried to do it a few times, and it's not like she fell or anything, but she bicycled perfectly fine. She said, "You know, I just don't enjoy this. I find this kind of boring." I said, "Well, we could talk while we bicycle." "No, she don't like to do that." So after a couple of years, I realized, you know, she's not going to bicycle with me, and that's just the way it is. And so I have other people that I bicycle with. I don't bicycle with her. I'm going to die without ever going on a bicycle trip with my wife. And that's just the way life turned out.
And you have to accept
and
that.
Fortunately, I have a lot of other ways to connect with my wife that work just fine. So it's the same thing with porn. Some people, they would just love their wives or girlfriends to watch porn with them. And it's not going to happen, and that's the end of it, and let's go on to the next project, which is, how about if you wear a green hat during sex?
Right.
Would you be willing to do that?
So why do you think that they would love it? I mean, does it relieve their guilt because they're watching it, or does it turn them on more?
I think for different people, it's different. You know, for some people, it's, if you watch this with me, I feel more accepted and less judged.
Right.
For some people, it's, if you watch this with me, boy, it's really exciting. For some people, it's, if you watch this with me, you'll understand me better. For some people, and I think this is completely unrealistic, for some people, it's, if you watch porn with me, it will loosen you up sexually. That practically never happens.
Right. I mean, that's
so
crazy.
I think when, just like people watch porn for different reasons, people want their wives and girlfriends to watch porn for different reasons, too.
Mary, do you watch porn with your husband?
You know, I have a problem watching porn. Well, I don't have a problem. I used to watch with my neighbor Dave a lot. My neighbor and I watched a lot of porn. But I don't know. You know,
were you sexual with your neighbor?
No. It was just when I had my radio show at Vivid, every week I would watch whoever my guest was. I would go watch her movies with my neighbor Dave. And my neighbor Dave loves to watch porn, and we would watch it together, but not like anything. So we would just kind of watch it, and he'd be like, oh, my God, look what I saw this week, or look at this girl I like. So it's different because my neighbor Dave was kind of really into, like, big boobs. I like big boobs. So it's like we like the same type of girls, whereas my husband is really into, like, you know, like 4'10" Asians, for example. Like, literally, like, tiny little Asians, and I'm like a 5'9" blonde with big boobs.
Does that make you insecure?
Very insecure. And it's actually the first time because normally I would be very, you know, like most guys I've been with kind of like girls with, like, blonde hair, big boobs, you know, like kind of similar. So it makes me feel very insecure because it's the complete opposite of me. Whereas if he looked at stuff like my neighbor Dave, who looks at whatever's most popular on Pornhub, or, you know, neighbor Dave, like the bigger the boobs, the better, you know, like if my husband was into that, I probably wouldn't be insecure. It's just that's the complete opposite of me in every aspect.
What do you think, Dr. Klein?
I think that people don't make other people insecure. People feel insecure.
On their own.
So I'm 68 years old, and every time my wife goes to the airport, she sees a lot of young guys.
Right.
Every time she goes to the gym, she sees a lot of young guys. Every time she goes to work, she sees a lot of young guys. Every time she walks out of the house, she sees a lot of young guys. And every time she turns on TV, she sees a lot of young guys. So I'm never going to be 35 years old again. I'm never going to be 35 years old again. And so I have to come to terms with that.
And accept
I'm
yourself.
Never going to be a small Asian, but what? How do you explain if somebody, if that's all their girlfriends, all they look at, and then, you know, are Asians and you're not an Asian?
Because you fell in love with the person, maybe not their boobs.
But, I mean, it's just a little, isn't it? Like, why not marry an Asian if that's what you really like?
Ah, that is the question of our... That is the question of our species. If you know you like this, why do you marry that?
Right.
Everybody is in a mixed marriage, you know?
Yes, they are.
Everybody is in a mixed marriage of one kind or another because you're always marrying somebody who's not you.
Right.
But some people, they take that one step further. And, you know, the problem is that people marry people for the worst reason possible, which is because they fall in love. And you can't trust... You can't trust that motivation. And people sometimes marry a certain kind of person because they want to get away from what they really like, because they don't feel comfortable with what they really like.
Right.
Some people, I see this, you probably do too, Dr. Sophie. You see a couple where a woman is from a chaotic family background. She marries a guy who's really steady. He's an accountant. He's an engineer.
He's a doctor.
He's a kindergarten teacher. You know, whatever it is. Yeah. A really steady, nice guy.
Right.
And after about 2 years of all that wonderful stability and lack of chaos,
they're bored.
She's bored to death.
Yeah.
So she married the guy for a very understandable reason, but now that she got what she came for, she's ready for something else.
Next.
And this woman is vulnerable to having an affair.
Right.
And it's not that the guy should feel insecure about her. And it's not that you know, there's any mental illness going on here. People are doing the best they can.
So, yeah, he was a transitional object.
Exactly. And the problem is that we don't have transitional marriages. You know, we don't have, look, let me marry you for a few years and
right.
work out this issue, and then we'll each go our own separate way.
Right.
We don't have that.
Well,
and once people have children, you know, that really creates problems.
Well,
but you're right. Transitional object is the way to describe a lot of relationships that that become troubling very quickly.
Yeah, they're rebounds a lot of times.
Yeah, yeah, rebound from our family issues, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, I'm writing a book with Phil now, and we're addressing in one of the chapters about, you know, when you've gotten your divorce, don't run into something and start to marry somebody because you're not ready.
Don't date someone
rebound.
2 weeks later in rehab.
Right, exactly.
Which not the way to do it.
Not the way to do it. Mary got divorced and she was.
I met someone in rehab. Right,
she had her next victim picked.
The day I got to Promises. Well, we didn't start officially dating until the second day I was in Promises.
Right. But yeah, I mean, you're just reacting to what you're coming from. So, what would you say is the most important thing people should take away from today's podcast, Dr. Klein?
I've actually learned a lot today, by the way.
Good.
Well, thank you, Mary.
No, I really have, because, I mean, this is my first time I've had these issues. And
well, what I would like people to take away from our conversation is, number one, they should go buy my book, His Porn, Her
yes.
Pain.
I'm going to buy it.
Buy them all.
Well, that too. I mean, my book, Sexual Intelligence, which I wrote a few years ago, has been translated into about 25 languages.
Very
That's
nice.
Really been so helpful for just ordinary people with ordinary sexual difficulties. But what I'd like for people to take away today is a lot of people are in conflict about pornography when they really should be talking about some other subject. It's much easier to talk about, I don't want you to watch porn. You're not the boss of me. It's a lot easier to fight about that than it is to talk about, George, whatever happened to our sex life? We used
right.
to have great sex. Now we don't have great sex. We hardly ever have sex for that matter. Or, George, whatever happened to you chasing me around the house? Or whatever it is. It's a lot easier to quarrel about pornography than it is to talk about, what are we going to do about our son? You and I really disagree about how we're raising our son, and he's 14 years old, and for God's sake, we really need to figure this out. So it's a lot easier to quarrel about porn. So what I hope our listeners will take away from our conversation today, which I really appreciate, you guys, but what I hope people take away is, if you're in conflict about porn, talk about what you really need to talk about instead of talking about porn.
Because it's not about porn.
It generally is not about porn. It's generally about something else, whether it's about power, whether it's about grief, whether it's about whatever happened to our sex life, whether it's about anger about money, whether it's about anger about the in-laws, whatever it's about, talk about whatever you need to talk about rather than quarreling about porn.
Dr. Marty Klein, thank you so much for all of your insight. Your
I book, learned so much.
Your books are great, Sexual Intelligence. Everybody can get these on your website?
Yes, my website is www.sexed.org, S-E-X-E-D.org. Not sexed.com, which happens to be a porn site.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
That's funny.
If you want to go to my website, it's sexed.org. There's a lot of free articles there, a lot of Q&A. There's stuff about various aspects of relationships and sexuality. And I'm so glad I had a chance to meet you, Dr.
Thank
Sophie.
You.
I hope that we'll be in touch. And
absolutely.
Mary, it's nice to,
yes,
to quote
great.
Unquote see you again after all these years.
Definitely. No, this is amazing. I feel like, you know, Dr. Sophie being my doctor, this is all planned today. I bet he told me to stop by the studio because this was supposed to reach me, and it did actually, but I know Dr. Sophie and he's sneaky, and this was all planned. His treatment of me was listening to you today.
And to buy the books.
Yes. Well, Dr. Sophie, you should buy me the book.
Okay, I'll buy you the book.
As part of my therapy.
I'll get Sexual Intelligence. That's the first one you'll read.
Well, I think I know that one. I think I need the other one. I think I need His Porn, Her Pain.
Take two. They're small.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, okay. So it's
a long plane ride.
It would be great, actually. I'm going to read that on the plane.
Yep.
That'd be actually very funny, people seeing me, like...
Reading a
sex
book.
Like reading that.
Right.
Like, wait a minute, isn't she the one who's in the porn? That's actually very funny. I should wear, like, a super, like, slutty outfit on the plane
right.
and really do, like, porn makeup, have my boobs really popping out, not conservative like I am today. And
they're in a cage.
Yeah, today they're hidden. This is actually really, this would be funny. I mean,
yes.
I'm actually going to read the books. I need the help. But
yes.
I'm just saying that it would be really comical if I do it
that
looking
way.
like a stereotypical porn star. How people
right. Why not? Dr. Marty Klein, thank you so much for your time.
No, it's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
My pleasure.
Bye.
This is all a trick. You tricked me here today on purpose.
What'd you learn?
Well, I mean, the thing is I still don't understand is, I mean, basically he's saying that, you know, by the porn is not the problem. Like, you know, like what he's looking at is not the problem.
Yeah, it's the Band-Aid, the wounds
but
underneath.
But I mean, I still, again, if Joe was looking at, like, a variety of different girls or, like, girls with blonde hair, big boobs, it wouldn't bother me if it was, it's the fact that it's like.
But you've got to learn to get secure that if you're as good as you think you are, then he's got the best.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like maybe it was, you know, he thinks that, oh, this, like, you know, being with someone like me is not what he's actually attracted to. It just,
but
what
does
he think
say?
He thinks it looks better to people than being with, you know, male or to bride. You know, I mean, I realize that now too. I mean, and I realize that, like, you know, obviously I'm not building trust by sleeping with a cell phone in my pillowcase, sleeping with his iWatch, keeping him logged out of the computer.
Or tantruming.
Yeah, none of that's. Because I have insight. I wish I didn't, actually. But I do.
It's a good thing.
And I can see, like, I can see when I'm being crazy. I can see that all the things he does for me. I mean, the simplest gestures of, like, if he stops at the gas station, he'll come home with, like, a candy. Like, I won't even, he'll never go to the store, and whatever store
without
it is.
Not thinking about you.
He always, I'm going to start crying thinking about it. He always is so considerate.
Yeah.
And I'm not considerate like that.
I know.
No, I'm really not.
I know.
Like,
not kidding, I know.
I mean, the way he
I'm your doctor, I know.
I know. Dr. Suppy, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
I actually really learned a lot, you know,
did?
And I did. I learned a lot. I mean, it's kind of just reiterating the stuff that you say, but I know that you just have to have
keep
me here.
Drilling it in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
I'm glad you did, because your marriage is something you should work hard on. Because remember, trust, remember what we learned today.
Yeah.
What?
Well,
about trust. No, about trust.
That if you're sitting there, you know, checking the phone and going through the computer and doing all that stuff, then you're not actually ever going to build any trust.
Right.
Trust is having to let the person do what, you know, they want to, you know, give them the chance to see if they do the right, you know what,
yes,
the safe, yes, right thing in the relationship.
So, and that I just want to reiterate, there are four key things we should leave here today with. And the first thing is to really realize in any relationship, the frequency and the intensity of sex does die down. And with age. And so we have to be honest with ourselves and our partners. And if that's changing and you don't like it, or it's changing and you do like it, it should be talked about. And that's the first thing that every relationship
should have. We've never had an issue with that.
Well, but you're not old enough maybe yet.
Yeah.
But in any relationship, it does die down. And so it has to be addressed if it's not working for both people.
Okay.
Because otherwise they'll find somebody, their partner, watching porn, masturbating in the down the hall after they go to bed. So talking about those kinds of things is the first thing to really be really aware of. And then to understand that the feeling of love, that intensity in sex and all that in the beginning of a relationship is something that will probably never last. You know, and how many times do you act on that? All of us do.
Yeah.
And you just can't make long-term commitments on it because that's not really what's going to be the long haul.
Yeah.
You know, the long haul is going to be something that's a real connection and you build that. And that's why the faster you date and get to a marriage, the faster you're going to get to your divorce.
Hmm.
But the slower you go, the more life you give in, the more longevity. The third thing I think that's very important is what we were just saying. Trust is the belief in something with the absence of a fact. Do you know what that means?
Trust is a belief in something.
Like, you don't have to have concrete evidence. You have to trust and believe in something.
Yeah.
Without the evidence.
My problem is I've trusted so many times before I eventually, like, I was trusting for about a month, and then all of a sudden I just happened to one day come down the stairs and find the secret iPad or the secret device. But meanwhile, I was trusting. So,
right. Well, you
I
were
mean,
trusting.
I've trusted, you know, numerous times.
But you didn't start.
Only
but you would react each time, which would kill then the ability for him to feel safe, which would then make you not be able to trust. Because the more he hid, the more you got suspicious.
Yeah.
And it's a bad cycle to be in. So you've got to just take, like, it's a jump into the deep end of the pool. You're going to trust Joe from day one, now on, and until he proves it different.
I mean, that's the thing I right now want to say, okay, fine, keep your cell phone at night, and
you
here's
should.
The log into the computer. But I know that I'm going to come downstairs
but
in the middle of the night and find
you're
him.
You have to control yourself. And you have to believe that you're going to trust him until you have actual facts. And the facts are brought to you, or you trip over them, not go investigating for them.
Well, I mean, if I walk down the stairs in the middle of the night, and then here he is on the computer doing, like, I mean, how do I believe that he would not be able to control himself, and he'll go back to the exact same behaviors.
But then that's who he is, then. Let him be himself.
Just let
so
him
you
do
know.
That.
So you know who he is.
Well, that's obviously how he's always been.
Okay, but then there's maybe nothing wrong with it. Who knows?
Yeah.
So that's the third thing we have to take away. And that's the fourth thing is the most important thing as far as pornography and relationships. When people are coming and complaining about porn, my husband's watching porn, my wife's watching porn, whatever, That's the issue isn't the porn.
Yeah.
It's what's driving the need for the porn.
Mm-hmm.
There's a break in the relationship,
yeah.
or there's some issue that's not being discussed, or they're not agreeing on Johnny's discipline, something.
Or, I mean, I
but
believe you said with Marty that, you know, it was a trauma that one of them suffered. I mean, I
right.
believe, obviously, like, maybe Joe has some sort of issue that happened. That's why he's drawn to this certain
type of
person
right.
because there was a trauma associated with
right.
him. Or
exactly.
At the time when he became obsessed with that particular thing, he went through a trauma. You know.
Right, and everybody has to look at that stuff.
Yeah.
You got to look at it all. So, the porn is just the Band-Aid. There's a wound underneath. Hey, everybody, thank you for joining us today. My phone app is available on the iTunes store. Go get it. It's free. My voicemail is always there for you, 1-855-767-4966. My book, Side by Side, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication, is out there, so go grab it. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook, and you'll know where I'm going to be. And visit iTunes to download the full version of Andy Grammer's Keep Your Head Up. And the most important thing for me is don't forget to sweep.